You're listening to the Family Matters Podcast, brought to you by the Montana Family Foundation. Join Derek A. Straker and Patrick Webb weekly for faith-fueled conversations about pressing issues, current events, and politics in the Big Sky State. When it comes to faith and freedom, family really matters. Welcome back to the Family Matters Podcast. Derek A. Straker here in studio with Patrick Webb, as always. How you doing, Patrick?
Good, Derek. How are you today?
I'm doing all right. I'm nursing a cold, but we're getting over it. Excited today. We have another special guest and a dear friend of mine, Greg Kometz, a duly elected representative for House District 38. Over in Miles City. We're so glad to have him here in Helena. He made the trip yesterday, and despite some inclement weather and tough driving conditions along the way, he's made it all the way, and we're glad to have you here, Greg. How are you?
Well, I'm really glad to be here, Derek, and Family Foundation has always been very dear to my heart, and I'd known about the Family Foundation for years. But to be honest with you, I never really knew what they did until I, as a representative, reported for duty about a year ago to Helena for my first session. And I got to see firsthand Family Foundation in action.
Well, I'll tell you what, as I've traveled the state and I've talked about, especially our freshman class, which you were in last session, first-time legislators, you could see day one, everyone has a smile on their face. About midway through the session, there's maybe a handful of people with smiles on their face and even fewer at the end of the session, but you were one of them. You just had the joy of the Lord on your face the entire session. You knew what you were there to do, and you were there to glorify God. And I just appreciate that about you. Tell us about your first session.
Well, it was really interesting. I had no real political background or political experience. And I had sold my Miles City business. And one day I got a phone call. And it said, this is the Central Committee in Custer County. And we're banging around some candidates because Representative Homland has termed out. And would you be interested? And I hadn't even given it a thought. And I just said, you can bang my name around. That would be fine. And so at 7 o'clock the next morning, my phone rang and it was Representative Jerry Schillinger from Circle. And he said, Greg Kometz, I just want to congratulate you on you're going to run for that House District seat. And so that started the wheels in motion right there.
Yeah, that's incredible. And then you make it out to Helena. I'm sure you had some preconceptions about what it was going to be like. What was true in your mind, and came true when you got to Helena, as far as what it was going to be like, and then what completely surprised you?
Well, Representative Homland, he coached me a little bit. We had coffee several times, so a lot of the surprises were on the legislative aspect were kind of handled. But what I never realized was where the culture war was actually fought. I'd heard about it, and we supported Family Foundation personally and through our church. But I had no idea, to be honest with you, that the culture war is fought in the halls of state capitol buildings in America. And I got to see firsthand that culture war battle take place before my very eyes. And so I was shocked.
Yeah, and when we talk about the culture war, certainly at the Family Foundation, we have a good sense of what we mean when we talk about that. I think when you're saying that, Patrick and I understand. I mean, for our listeners, when we're talking about the culture war, what that conjures up in my mind is, issues like transgender surgery on minors, which was a bill that we had this past session, a bill to protect kids from these types of radical, irreversible surgeries. We also have the issue of life, you know, in every stage, you know, from conception to the grave. We have assisted suicide legislation. We have abortion legislation. So the culture war can be fought on many fronts. And Patrick, I mean, maybe there's more to talk about there. What do you think?
Yeah, no, I think that the culture war encapsulates so many things, so many issues. I mean, it has infected and permeated our entire society in many ways. And that goes all the way down to our children and some people believing that the state has a primary role in educating our children and being responsible for every aspect of their lives instead of their parents or guardians. And this also encapsulates just wokeism in general. And frankly, it is a refutation of truth, is what it is, and absolutely a refutation of biblical principles in society.
That's right. That's right. So that was the most shocking thing to you, Greg, was the culture war being played out in front of your eyes here in the state capitol. You sat on some pretty important committees. I know you were on judiciary, and that had to have been eye-opening. What are some things that stand out to you from your time on the House Judiciary Committee?
Well, you know, I shared with you, I had no idea what I was getting into. And so I began to report for duty every day. The Judiciary Committee met, and we actually saw about 275 bills run through that committee in the 88 days we were in session. And some of these... I don't know if my words can paint a good enough picture, but I'm going to try. We had one bill presented by Brandon Lear, and it was a very, very simple bill. And the bill said that you can call students by their birth pronoun, because the pronoun thing has become just toxic. And so Brandon took the stand in the committee hearing, but you have no idea, unless you're there, what that committee hearing room looks like. Because when you present a contentious bill like this, the Highway Patrol is in charge of security at the state capitol. So you've got a highway patrolman, and he is there standing at attention, and he is fully armed. This is like serious stuff. And the television cameras from the news stations, they're also there when these contentious bills are being presented. And of course, the room is full of proponents to testify and opponents to testify. And I had to make a presentation or two on the culture war in my city at my church and a couple other churches. And so I took a film clip from that committee hearing of Brandon Lear introducing this bill. And he started the bill off by saying, you know, he lives on a farm and ranch, and he said, cows are cows and bulls are bulls. And the bill basically said if Johnny becomes Jane over the weekend, did in a school situation, you can still call Johnny Johnny. And so he made his bill presentation. And then the hearing always opens up to proponents and opponents. And so in this particular hearing on this very important bill, we had one proponent testify, Jeff Lasloffy with the Montana Family Foundation. We had 29 opponents testify, and it was a two-hour hearing, and it was tense. So I don't know if my words could paint a picture, but I tried, Derek.
You painted an accurate picture, because I was there. I was there watching. Jeff was the only person to testify in support of that bill. I do remember that. That was a contentious bill. And you're right. It was very simple. It was so simple, in fact, that we could analogize it to calling bulls are bulls and cows are cows. Those are the simple battles that are taking place in the legislature that have a palpable spiritual warfare behind them. You know, we had bills that defined male and female. And that was another bill this past session. Very simple. A man is a man and a woman is a woman. And we defined it. We could answer Matt Walsh's question, you know, what is a woman? We defined it here in Montana. We had other simple bills to protect minors from irrevocable adult decisions about their chosen gender and sex. Very simple bill, protect kids. We had a lot of simple bills. Another one that comes to mind, and I know you'll smile when I mention this one. We had a bill to prevent drag queen story hours. You know, and Jeff Laszlofy, our president, again, was one of the few proponents on that bill. And he just made the point that, you know, we have a lot of drag queens clamoring to read stories to little kids, but he'd never seen a little kid, neither have I, clamoring to have a drag queen read a story to them. And it just, why is that, Greg?
But you know, I can remember that that bill hearing just vividly. I had never actually seen a drag queen. I saw several that day. They were in the committee hearing. And, you know, you talk about speeches, and Jeff Laszlofy gave a great speech, but probably the greatest speech I heard in my whole time in judiciary was at that hearing. And it was by our superintendent of public instruction, Elsie Arneson. And, you know, I'm kind of unfamiliar with all this. And here's Elsie showing up at this committee hearing. And I thought, boy, that's kind of strange. And of course, Jeff spoke. And then I think a little later, Elsie spoke. And Elsie, if you know her, she's usually, for lack of a better word, long-winded. And Elsie got up and she looked that room over and she looked at a drag queen. And she said, "This does not belong in education," and sat down. And very powerful words.
Yeah, you know, sometimes you just need to be shortened to the point. Mm-hmm. And at the Family Foundation, you know, we really believe in speaking truth with conviction and love. And sometimes you have to be bold in proclaiming that truth.
Dan, I just want to speak to just kind of the perception from opponents on this issue that this is a freedom that they are trying to give to parents or children. And we encounter the same type of mindset in school board hearings. Very recently, we were in Billings and Laurel as the school board was trying to debate or going through a debate to decide whether or not to include sexually explicit books in the libraries. And again, the opponents oftentimes believe that this is freedom to view any types of books that you want, when in reality, we're talking about things that are pedophilic in nature. They are sexually explicit materials that should be illegal for children to view, pornographic materials. I mean, it is not that we are banning books or that we don't want people to be free and associate with who they want. It's that it is not appropriate put this type of stuff in front of minors, period.
Yeah, that brings to mind a couple bills. We had House Bill 234, I know from your good friend, Bob Phelan. Representative Phelan had a bill to bring some clarity to our obscenity laws. And, you know, obviously that's in the context of school and libraries. Quite often nowadays, but there actually was an exemption in our law that actually didn't do much. It exempted librarians and teachers and museum curators from a law that didn't apply to them anyway. But I digress because our obscenity law, our general obscenity statute, applies to everybody, and it always has. It applies to librarians. It applies to teachers. It applies to museum curators. If you're out there listening, it applies. You can't be obscene. The problem is that obscenity is a really tough measuring stick. It's hard legally to prove the case of obscenity. So when Patrick is talking about age appropriateness as the measuring stick, that's something we don't need a statute to be the measuring stick for. We don't need that. We know what's appropriate for our children to view and what's inappropriate for them to view. As parents, as grandparents, we don't need specialized knowledge. We just have that innate in our desire to protect our children and our desire to direct the moral and religious upbringing of our children. We can determine pretty well as parents and grandparents what's age appropriate for children. So it's not a question of book banning. It's not even a question of these books are obscene. It's a question of what's appropriate for my child to look at and to check out of the library. What's age appropriate? And that's something I think we need to return our focus to that rather than, I digress. Greg, what's your take on some of these materials in our school libraries? Are you seeing this out in Miles City? What's kind of the pulse out there?
Well, I think what we're seeing, there's actually a lot of pushback on this. I think since it has been brought to the forefront, there are some instances where some of these school librarians are, for lack of a better word, pushing the envelope. And they're putting these books out there. And that was a very interesting bill hearing. We were, this bill was coming up, and my phone rang like it does when you're a legislator. And my good friends, the Stevensons that have the Stevenson funeral homes, they were coming up to Montana or to Helena for the annual convention. And I said, today is the day you need to visit the Capitol. And because we're hearing 234 is going to be on the floor. And oh my goodness, they saw things that they couldn't believe. And I, as a legislator, saw things I couldn't believe because I went to my desk, seat number 13 on the House floor, and there's a book there. And it's all wrapped up nice and pretty. And I opened that book up, and it's a book called Gender Queer. And if you look in this book, you just would never, ever think that this thing would even be out there. It is beyond description. And I'm sure you guys know exactly what I'm talking about because you saw it. And so there is a war going on, and it is fought daily on Capitol Hill, and it's going to be the same thing when we reconvene a year from now.
And, you know, speaking of that, you know, continuing war, I mean, one thing that we also talk a lot about on this podcast, Representative, is we talk about, you know, religious liberties and the need to, you know, make sure that those are being protected in Montana. And you were a champion on religious liberties in the state legislature, bringing two bills, House Bill 745 and 744, which related to religious materials and prayer in schools. And that was, I mean, those were really great to see be brought. And just wondering if you wanted to speak briefly to those two bills that were ultimately signed into law by the governor.
Yeah, I would love to speak on those two bills because the impetus behind these two bills was actually a football coach from Remerken, Washington named Joe Kennedy. And I don't know if you can remember his case in particular. But he was a football coach, and after the game, and they were done in the locker room, and most of the people had left the stands, he would ask, is there anybody that would like to go with me out to the 50-yard line, and we're just going to bow down, and we're just going to thank God that we had a great game, win or lose. And he put no pressure on any of the players to go. It was strictly voluntary, and they did that. And I'll be darned, the school got wind of this, and they eventually fired him. And this case, it took several years, but it went to the Supreme Court, and he won. And so this bill, House Bill 745 and 746, part of this would allow a conversation about religion, not just the Christian religion. If I was a teacher and a student approached me and started the conversation, it would allow me to have that conversation continue. And we wouldn't. So it gave, the way that I argued it in the committee hearings is it's a freedom-giving bill. It's freedom for all religions. And it did several other things, too. It allowed faculty to voluntarily, once again, all about freedom, who opened school events in prayer. And another thing that happened in that bill is voluntarily, again, all for freedom. If you were doing a book report, you could use the Bible for a reference. And once again, all voluntary. But there was some pushback on this, like you could imagine. But I was very pleased to see these bills cycle through and to see the governor sign them. So little outline of them.
Yeah, we were pleased to see you bring them. And you know, I think some of our listeners are going to be familiar with that story of Coach Kennedy over in Washington. A great story about religious freedom and taking that all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court. And, you know, having those bills here in Montana so that no child who wants to bring their Bible to school is going to have to take it all the way to the Supreme Court in order to make sure she could. You know, we get stories like that all the time at the Montana Family Foundation. You know, there were, some years back, there was a little girl who brought her Bible to bring your favorite book to school day. And she was told by her teacher, you can bring any book, but you can't bring that one. We got involved. We contacted the administration. This was before your bills, you know, existed. But really, the law was on our side, even at that time. And we talked with the administration, and we said, you know, look, you can't disparage or discriminate against the Christian religion. And with some education and through our outreach, they understood, and they allowed the girl to bring a Bible to school. Your law clarifies what is the truth here on this issue, that you can bring your Bible to school. You can talk about your faith on public school grounds. So, you know, you talk about freedom. That's a true freedom, be able to express your faith as a student on public school grounds.
I think that we also need to remember that it's so important that we are educating folks about these changes in law, because, you know, I was just mentioning to you earlier, a gentleman that I know who I've went to Bible study with, he was, you know, praying with a couple kids in his high school class who had come up and asked him to, you know, teach him a little bit about the Bible. And he had done it, you know, a couple times, and then felt very nervous about doing that at his school, which is a public school, and decided that he would, you know, hold these meetings off site at a McDonald's and have their folks drop him off in the morning before school and pray with these kids. And so I think it's just so interesting that we live in a culture where people are very fearful of breaking the law because we have so many. And just something that should be as common sense as just, you know, being able to have the freedom to pray with people and to teach them about, you know, things that they're interested in. It's just astounding to me sometimes that we live in this fear that we really have to overcome and really, you know, be a free people.
Derek, another just a small part of that bill that nobody ever thinks about is I just wonder what the school district in Bremerton, Washington spent in legal bills.
Right.
To take that case to that level.
Right.
And so this bill could actually save a lot of school districts a lot of money.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. That's a great point. Rather than having our taxpayer dollars being used to fight against our faith, literally. Untold millions you've saved the state of Montana, Greg. Untold millions.
Well, Greg, you might have a better idea what a lawyer charges, but anyway, I'm just teasing you. But it is untold millions.
Well, yeah. Greg, you know, just let's talk a little bit more about your time out in Miles City. You mentioned earlier that you had sold your business. Now, I see, as I travel the state, I'm always looking for evidence of your business around the state. And maybe you could tell some listeners how they can spot some of those gate latches all across the state. I see them all the time now that you've pointed them out to me. But you just mass produced gate latches that are used throughout the state, throughout the country.
Well, it's kind of a strange thing. You know, I was a wrestler, and I wrestled 4 years in college at the University of Wyoming. And then, of course, I had two boys, and of course, they had to wrestle. So a wrestling club needs a fundraiser. So we get all the kids out to the welding shop, and we make these simple little over-center gate latches and sell them. Boy, they sold like unbelievable. And so I thought maybe this thing would work. So I invested in some equipment where we could rapidly produce this. And this little starved-to-death welding shop in Miles City, Montana, I think we might be the world's largest producer of over-center gate latches because they are like everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Western Ranch Supply in Billings, they're our number one dealer.
Yeah.
And there is thousands of them sold and in commercial fencers. So, yeah. Thank you for mentioning that.
I tell you, everywhere I go, I see them all the time and I point them out to my wife. I say, "There's Greg Komet's gate latch right there." So, I had the pleasure of driving out to Miles City the start of the past summer and visiting your home church. And you mentioned this as well. We got to jointly present about the culture war. And you know, people out there, Greg, are starved to hear about this. They experience it. They feel it. They're seeing it. They're seeing the moral degradation all around us. But they can't quite put their finger on it, and they're not sure how to engage. What are you finding as you travel the state, as you speak with constituents? How are you lighting that fire in them to get involved?
Well, Derek, the culture war is a strange situation in most churches because it involves parties and it involves politics. And we all know that this is a very hard subject for a lot of churches and a lot of pastors to broach because it creates division and conflict. And what I have found is that the Montana Family Foundation can bridge this gap that is there because a pastor or a church can support the Montana Family Foundation and they can follow your podcasts and they can have you personally show up and look at your material. And we escape the party affiliation in the culture war that could cause really serious problems in their church. So, Derek, I just think that the Family Foundation is just a huge part of allowing local churches to participate on the front lines of this culture war. And I don't know if I'm phrasing this correctly, but it can kind of make a pastor's job a little easier because they want to support this. But doing it in their own words is sometimes really difficult, and you give them an excellent way to fight the culture war.
Well, I appreciate that, Greg. Yeah, you know, and we understand that pastors are there to serve their congregation, and sometimes they don't view that role as overtly political. And you know, to some extent, people will sometimes think of the Montana Family Foundation as missionaries to the legislature. We are not. We live in a political world through our positions, and we advocate for biblical policies that align with our faith and with the truth that we understand from the Bible. So that is our role. And we hope that we can be a little bit of a vent for some churches and pastors out there who may not know how to engage. But one thing I'll mention, Greg, and something I'm really excited to mention, is that we're starting a new program at the Montana Family Foundation. It's called the Church Ambassador Network. And we're going to get this kicked off here in the next month. We've already found a director for this program. And this is exciting because this is the church involvement. This is connecting churches, pastors, congregants directly with elected leaders in all three branches of government, whether that's your judiciary, your executive, or your legislature. That's the missionary outreach, building relationships between our churches and our government, having people dedicated to pray for our leaders, having people dedicated to just be there to talk about biblical principles. I'm not going to tell you how to vote, but I'll pray for you. We need that. That's not my role or Patrick's role at the Montana Family Foundation, but we need to have relationships centered on Christ between our churches and our government. And that can be a role for our churches to be a little more active. And then in terms of the political stuff, we're still here for that. We're not going anywhere, Greg, but I'm so glad you mentioned that. Yeah.
And this position is going to be really great. I mean, this is a leader that these communities largely will need. And I think, you know, Greg pointing to the value of the Montana Family Foundation, kind of filling a role of kind of empowering or giving people, equipping people with the knowledge or the tools to be able to have these conversations in an easier way. I mean, the reality is we live in a society where the mainstream media is gaslighting the public. These issues are not real, or that they don't exist, or they're not as big a deal as they are. And so when we say that people are starving for, you know, these conversations, it's because people are starving for the truth. People want the truth. And when a leader comes to their community and is unafraid to speak the truth, people look up to those people. And throughout history, as tyranny rises, as totalitarianism starts to take root, it is truth that pushes it back. And it's a very encouraging thing that there are people across the state of Montana that are hungry for it and are willing to stand up for it.
Well, and speaking of leaders and people being starved for information and truth, Greg, you've been at the forefront of starting kind of a community action group, the Patriot Roundtable, out in Miles City, Montana. I mean, I see it all the time on social media. You guys are active. You are active. Can you talk a little bit about this organization and how it started and what your goals are and where you see this movement going?
Well, I would love to talk about it, Derek, because when I began to campaign, I got a phone call to help Barry Usher campaign in the towns of Custer and Hysham. And so I went door to door, really, for the first time politically. And I was amazed that people were totally unaware of really important issues that were happening right in our backyard. And I went home, and I this happens probably to everybody. I had one of these 3 a.m. wake-up calls, and I got up and I thought, somehow we have got to try to educate people on some of these subjects. So that very next day, I got on the phone, and Bill Ellis is here in the room, and there were several other people that we just got together, and we just decided to form a group. And with really no rules other than we would cover subjects the mainstream media doesn't cover. And boy, we have covered a multitude of subjects. And you were there. You spoke to our group one night, and it was a really well-attended event. But it's the first Sunday night of every month in Miles City, and well, you can access it. It's called the Patriot Roundtable, and we're on Facebook, and you can find out what we're talking about and when.
Yeah, no, I mean, incredible group. I was there, and I know it's only grown from there because you have incredible speakers come through. I know you've had the Attorney General. I know you've had our Congressman, Matt Rosendale. You've had some incredible speakers, and it all started from a 3 a.m. wake-up call, and that's the cool thing. I'm Greg, you're one of my favorite people. You have just amazing stories. I love going out into the fields with you in Miles City and helping control the pest population. I enjoy visiting with you. You're just one of God's awesome people, and I appreciate you. As we kind of wrap up here today, what do you see at the forefront here over the next year? We've got a lot of important issues here, Greg. We've got our Supreme Court races. We've got a constitutional amendment being proposed to put abortion on the ballot. We've got some important issues. We've got a jungle primary ballot issue that's people are starting to gather signatures for right now. Not to mention the presidential race. We've got a Senate race. We've got some big issues coming up in less than a year here for the state of Montana. What else are you seeing, Greg? What are your constituents talking about as this is what matters?
You know, kind of back to the culture war thing, I will just never forget some of the things that happened in some of these committee hearings. And there is a transgender lobbyist that's active in the Capitol every day. And I can remember at a committee hearing, this lobbyist standing and pointing his finger at the U-shaped, us members in a U-shaped committee hearing, saying, "We are winning." And he said it several times. "We are winning." He said, "We now have 20% of high school students questioning their gender. And so I think we have just got to keep pedal down and the truth going out, and education and truth are the really the only way to have freedom. And so we just, all of us, have to engage ourselves in this battle as it goes forward.
No, I'm glad you said that, Greg. I mean, you know, the lobbyists pointing the finger, and you talk about, you sit kind of in a U shape facing the lobbyist, and the lobbyist saying, we've got 20% of today's youth questioning their gender. Think about that, folks. 20%, one in five kids, and that's growing. It needs to be like that. This is a campaign to lie to our children. Now, when I think of this in this context, I'm often drawing analogies to the opioid epidemic. You had a whole generation of people being lied to about the addictive nature of these opioids. You had families ruined, lives ruined, people died. And then you had these opioid companies come forward with the truth about the addictive nature. You know, that's an opioid epidemic. We have another epidemic right here that we've got to be ready for. An epidemic of young people being lied to about the nature of biological sex and this social construct they call gender. We have people being lied to about this, and they're making irreversible decisions about their physical bodies. They're treating an inward problem with an outward solution. It's really scary, but I think the church needs to be ready, Greg. The church needs to be ready when these people wake up and realize they've made some horrible mistakes about gender, about biological sex, about mutilating their own bodies. That's a scary thing. And if we don't have an army of warriors and churchgoers and Christians and faithful followers of Christ ready to stand there and accept them with the truth, with compassion and love, with boldness and conviction, then we've failed as a church, I think. So I'm glad you brought that up. That is something on the forefront for not just this year, but for many years to come, I think.
But Eric, just a quick comment on that. You know, as a Christian, you know, I'm sure there's thousands of people that could say the same thing, that if this love, joy, peace, and purpose that I have in my life, if I could bottle it up and sell it, I would be a millionaire overnight. But statistics, I think the statistic is true about the 20% being confused about their gender. But there's also a statistic that's very true, and that is the number of suicides and attempted suicides that follow this transitioning people. And it's a solid, provable number. And so on one hand, you've got this love, joy, peace, and purpose on the other hand. And on the other hand, you've got this confusion that can ultimately and does many times lead in suicidal death, because it just is not a fulfilling lifestyle that produces what we have.
Yeah, that's right. That's right, Greg. You know, we know biblically that Jesus Christ is our reason for life and life more abundantly. And we, when you talk about that love, joy, peace that just overflows within you, that comes from Christ. And we know that as believers, and we want that for everyone, because that's what God wants. It's difficult to see this generation of people being lied to, being confused. We know that is satanic. It comes from the father of lies. And yeah, that is going to be a struggle. It's the struggle of this generation, I think. I think you're right.
Blaise Pascal put it really nicely when he said, in every single one of us is a God-shaped hole that only God can fill. And we have a generation that is looking to fill that hole with drugs, surgeries, hormones, pornography, video games, whatever it is. And I mean, this is a tale as old as time. but we got to keep speaking the truth. And, you know, I think it's really great. It's really encouraging to see that Patriots Roundtable. I just checked your guys' Facebook. You guys have 2,100 people on that page. So check out Patriots Roundtable on Facebook if you guys are looking to get connected to Greg's group. And I'm sure even if you're outside of the area, you know, they'd love you to follow what they're doing and be a part of the conversation. And maybe if you're in the area, you can hit a meeting. And beyond that, you know, we encourage listeners to go to our website. You are going to start seeing some changes on the website. We should have some new pages added here soon, a grassroots section, a legal capability section. And we have groups that are starting to meet across the state who are working to make and affect change locally and then prepare for the legislative session that's coming up. If you want to get involved, please go to our website, fill out our contact us form. And, you know, if you don't even feel like that's something that you can do, take this podcast that you just listened and share it to one new person. That would be a great help as well.
Yeah, that's right. Get the word out. Greg, I want to give you the final word here. You know, you made it out to Helena. I know there's a big event going on. We've got lots of news happening around us. I know there's a new candidate for United States Senate as of today. I know Congressman Rosendale has announced, and obviously that makes things really spicy, is one way to put it. But there's a lot going on. What are you here in Helena for? And tell us about your weekend.
No, I'm greatly looking forward to it. You know, this legislative journey that I've been on, it's really hard to explain. I mean, I go back to when I was 17 years old and I walked into the wrestling room at the University of Wyoming, and you make friends so fast in that extremely tense environment. And as a freshman, you walk into the Capitol building and you don't know anybody, and you make friends so fast, and they are great people and great friends. And so selfishly, I came up here just to say hi to a lot of folks, and I came up with some legislative ideas that I want to bang around with people and just to spend time with great people. I guess that's how I would sum my weekend up.
Well, that's great, Greg. I get the feeling that you still make friends real fast. You're just that kind of guy. So, folks, thank you for joining us today on the Family Matters podcast. We hope that you find our content encouraging and educational. Thank you so much. Stay the course, and God bless.